activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
Interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object battling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This Earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, the 30th day of January, 2014. Where has the time gone, my friends? Where has it gone?
Somewhere else?
I'm asking you, where has it gone?
Well, I thought that was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I was just like, okay.
Where is all the time gone?
Okay.
And then we all thinking to ourselves, yeah, time is going very quickly, Dave Nelson. But we didn't say it out loud because rhetorical, you just seem kind of like an ass if you're like, or not, it's whatever.
Okay, well, let's start the show then. It is another Galactic Netcast. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 94. Temporarily in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, I'm Dave Nelson. Oh, no, wait a second. I'm Dave. He said it to the family dog, Nelson. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin, Brad, it was his wisdom, Ludwig, and Anessa, you won't even feel it, Moines from Denton, Texas. How you guys doing?
All right, how are you?
Awesome.
Pretty good. Thank you. Thanks for asking. Hey, this is the podcast where we talk about the invasion of aliens. Aliens all over the damn universe, and their appearances in TV, film, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. And we divide the show into three sections. The news, the creature feature, that's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien, and our picks for the week. If you would like to watch us do the show live, a couple of things. We are changing the start time starting next week to 7 p.m. Central Time. And just follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, for the link and all that crazy stuff where you can watch us live as we record the show for the podcast here on Google+, and at YouTube. Watch us later, youtube.com/galacticnetcast. So without further ado, let's get into the stuff with this right here. It is the audio that I want right here.
In the news.
I was looking for it. That was my way of stalling a little bit. In the news. In the news. Who's got the first story?
I do.
Okay, start. Go ahead.
Just going to sit here and be awkward. Trailer for the indie sci-fi thriller Prospect is now out.
Yay!
We have an actual trailer for the indie film, which was directed by Zeke Earl and Chris Caldwell. The film is described as an unusual coming-of-age story following a teenage girl and her father on a foreign planet as they hunt for resin, the valuable byproduct of rare insects.
Oh, wait a second. There's a pot joke here at someplace. Isn't there? Resin?
Probably.
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It doesn't look like they're pulling out their space weed, smoking that.
Although
reference
that,
to a previous episode.
Although that helmet would make a great bong pipe. That hose.
They're gonna hot box in the space helmet there.
Yeah, you just pipe it into that little hose right there.
Sure.
That'd be an awesome way to get high. Okay. Anyways.
Astronaut hot boxing. Bam. Cosmic hot box. There we go.
I think we got a show
title.
This early. It's an early show title. All right, Anessa. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Anessa. Go ahead with the story.
It's okay. Okay, go ahead.
The movie is inspired in part by the California Gold Rush. The film features a planet of desperate individuals seeking their fortunes, governed only by natural law. When the father is attacked by a roving bandit, the daughter must take vengeance. The film was funded through Kickstarter, and as of right now, there is no information on when we might get to see it. But we have the trailer, so woohoo!
Is there any way that we can play this trailer?
I'm playing it right now.
Okay. And of course, if I played it, you could hear the sound, but...
Yes, you could.
Yeah. But you know what? I got a lot going on at my end. I would crash the system if I tried to play
yes,
that thing.
Yes, you would. As I recall, it was filmed in the Pacific Northwest. But here's some of that resin that we were talking about if you're actually seeing the video. They're taking samples. They're, you know, checking things out. And things go awry.
Why do things always go awry? You know, let's have a science fiction film where everything just is fine. Nothing happens. Nothing bad happens.
Would you watch it?
I guess it would be boring, right? If nothing
happens. Yeah, that's why I'm asking. Like, would you watch it?
Well, you know, I remember having a discussion with a friend of mine that one of the best movies that you could watch for children is My Neighbor Totoro. And it's an anime film. There is no villain. There is no bad guy. There is no conflict. It's kind of like a snapshot into the life of this family that has kind of like wild spirits that live near them and the adventures that they have for this short span of time.
Hmm. Interesting.
It can be done. It's not really done
well
in Western storytelling.
Is that animation or is that a live action thing?
Animation. What, my Neighbor Totoro?
Yeah.
It's animation. Yep.
Damn it.
So.
Poor Dave. He's never going to watch it.
Nope. And it's even the answer to your question, but it's animation.
Oh. Maybe I'll like it. I don't know. I prefer live action. That's just the way I am. That's how I roll.
That's how you roll.
Yeah.
Word.
So are we excited about this movie? Do you guys want to see this?
I'd like to watch it at some point.
I would definitely check into it. One, it's an independent film, which it's kind of neat to see people trying to take a different approach to, you know, big budget sci-fi action blockbusters and see what somebody else wants to, you know, take a stab at it and see what they come up with. So,
yeah, it's nice to have something. Cool. Yeah, it'd be nice to have something like this that's not funded by a big, like, film studio, you know?
True that. Yep.
Some of the best sci-fi films came from independent roots. Like, look at District 9, right? That was independent, I believe.
Yes.
It started out to be, at least. What about that time travel film? What's it called?
Primer?
Primer, thank you. Yeah. That's
that was awesome. What about that time travel film? Primer? Yeah.
Great movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I think independents have a little more freedom creatively in what they do, whereas movies that come out from a big studio, the studio wants money, and so you're kind of confined to the standards and guidelines of things that work and things that make money, and they don't really want to take a lot of risks. So
that's where the whole
nice to have independent sci-fi.
That's where the whole Kickstarter thing is brilliant for this kind of stuff, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not beholden to a studio; you're beholden to the people that supported you, that backed you, and if they're interested in your product the way it is, then cool. Then you don't have to make those sacrifices.
Yep. Right.
Awesome. No release date yet, it looks like, right?
Right, yeah, there's no release date.
I think this is going to be one of those films that will be out for a very limited time or come out on pay-per-view first and then be released to select theaters and then back to pay-per-view again. Because I've seen that done with small films before.
Sure.
All right. It's called Prospect. Look for it sometime in the future. My story is one that I tipped to Brad, which I thought was kind of interesting, and it's kind of crappy at the same time. I can't believe this person's doing this. It's just dumb. So the headline is, lawsuit alleges NASA is failing to investigate alien life. Now, the alien life they talk about here is, in loose terms, alien life. It could be alien life, probably not. NASA recently announced that a strange rock had somehow appeared in front of its Mars Opportunity rover, which, by the way, that thing, did you guys see that 10 years on Mars video of all the stuff that Opportunity has done?
I have not.
Is it Opportunity or Spirit, the one that's still going after 10 years?
Opportunity, okay. I believe.
All right. The explanations for the mystery rock were straightforward, maybe some kind of nearby impact sent a rock toward the rover, or more likely the rover knocked the rock out of the ground and no one noticed until later. It's a few days between shots, so that's probably what happened, I'm guessing. Scientist Ron Joseph believes the rock was a living thing, really, and he's filed a lawsuit to compel NASA to examine the rock more closely. Joseph is involved with the Journal of Cosmology. There you go, right there. That's red flag number one. Online publisher of some very controversial papers. And for the record, NASA has identified it as a rock, a very special rock with rare properties even, but definitely a rock. So what are the chances you guys think that NASA is going to win this lawsuit?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're going to win.
Yeah. If it ever gets to court.
I don't think this guy has the money to go against NASA.
No. Let's see. The lawsuit is aimed at NASA and its administrator, Charles Bolden, requesting that the agency perform a public scientific and statutory public scientific and statutory duty, which is to closely photograph and thoroughly scientifically examine and investigate a punitive biological organism. Joseph?
Oh, I'm sorry. We were talking about the punitive. I thought we were talking about the lawsuit. That would be punitive. Okay. Putative.
What is punitive? Sorry. I've never seen this word before.
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked that, Dave Nelson. And that would be generally considered or reputed to be.
Oh, reputed. Okay, that makes sense. All right. Joseph is disputing the rock theory since when examined by Pentineer, the same...
By petitioner.
Oh, by petitioner.
This is the part of the legalese.
Okay. The same structure in miniature was clearly visible upon magnification, appears to have just germinated from spores. What? That's dumb. Whatever. The rock, according to the lawsuit, was there the whole time. It just grew until it became visible. Really? The refusal to take close-up photos from various angles, the refusal to take microscopic images of the specimen, the refusal to release high-resolution photos is inexplicable, recklessly negligent, and bizarre, according to the suit. So it turns out this guy has done a lot of, like, he's very...
crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's a conspiracy theorist guy. Like, I think he wrote some kind of theory about the 9/11 attacks. And something else that's not in the story. But, yeah. I think he's...
Yeah, I don't know. Typically, NASA eventually releases their high-res photos in mass. There's, like, a ton of them on their website. So I don't know what he's whining about. He just needs to be patient.
Yeah. Oh, I thought for a second there, Anessa, you were, like, taking a side going... Well, maybe NASA's covering it up.
No, NASA releases a lot of their high-res photos, like, unprocessed. And that's where you have people coming in and browsing through all their photos, and then they'll see an object and be like, oh, that's totally a UFO, or that's an alien spacecraft flying out in space, or whatever they might make of it in the photograph.
Yeah, we've had these stories before. Like,
there a couple... Yeah, but it's just a matter of time before it actually comes out as a high-res photo, so...
We had a comment on the story on our Google Plus page. A guy said, yeah, NASA would be crazy to release something that was possibly an alien, you know, and saying that it wasn't an alien, You know, it'd be dumb.
Yeah.
Whoever posted the photo would be fired in that case.
Right. I mean, if they suspected it to be alien, then they would have been like, oh, well, we're totally not going to mention it. Just keep going.
So Brad has the image up, the side-by-side of before and after. Rock, no
yeah,
rock.
Yeah, so the area, I don't know, can you see my pointer?
Yes.
The area that they're talking about is right over here. You see it's this area from what I can tell.
Not so much over there, but over here.
Yeah. This makes for great radio and or podcasting. But anyways, it's the corner of this rock. And what Joseph is saying is that within 12 days, some kind of spore generated from this spot here and made this.
Okay.
And NASA's saying, you're an idiot. That is not a spore. That is not life. That is something else.
All right.
And I believe, if not in this story, I read something else where they actually tested it out, checked it out, and it is not biological at all.
Oh, I thought it said in the story that they did that. Where is it?
It's a very special rock with rare properties.
Oh, rare properties. What could the rare properties mean?
Unobtainium.
Let's see.
It's totally unobtainium.
Is there anything else that we want to talk about in this story? Joseph has specifically requested and has demanded in writing the following of NASA. NASA Chief Administrator Bolden and NASA's rover team. Take 100 high-resolution close-up in-focus photos of the specimen at various angles from all sides and from above down into the bowl of the specimen and under appropriate lighting conditions with maximum or minimum glare. Take a minimum of 24 microscopic in-focus images of the exterior, lip, walls, and interior of the specimen under appropriate lighting conditions. And NASA and the rover team must make public and supply petitioner with all high-resolution photos and images of that specimen as demanded in A and B. Damn it. He's mad.
Okay. I dug up the follow-up story that is linked within the original article from Popular Science.
Did you dig it up, and, Brad? Like the rock? You dug it up?
Yes. they tested the rock, and what they're saying is because the rover had turned around in that area, that this exposed a piece of rock that had not been exposed to the Martian atmosphere and everything else, so it didn't get the kind of dusted over with the reddish sand. And they're saying they tested the rock, and it has a lot of sulfur in it, along with very high concentrations of manganese and magnesium. But it's a very, very strange rock.
It's special.
It's very special.
All right. Well, good luck, Mr. Joseph.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, before we continue on with the news, we would love your feedback on the stories that we've talked about or the stories that we're about to talk about. You can leave us an email, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. And you can call our voicemail as well. That's the other option. 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. You can say anything or nothing. I guess nothing wouldn't really work, right? Just send a blank email with nothing. Can you do that? Almost nothing. You'd have to have like a period or something or some kind of character, right?
I would think, because it would let you send it without a subject, but you might want to add At least a space or something in the body. Or vice versa.
We're just encouraging people, right? We're going
to send this random punctuation.
Please spam us. Yes, please spam us.
Nobody.
Delightful.
Okay. Again.
Actually, no, don't spam us.
GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com or call our voicemail number and breathe heavily.
What are you wearing, Dave Nelson?
Yeah, don't do that. More encouragement, bad. 805-328-3966, and we thank you for your feedback. All right, final story. Brad, you got it.
All right. So as I was surfing through the internets, I found this story that somebody had gone to the National Museum of Iraq, which is in Baghdad. Excuse me, and it has a very interesting art collection and various artifacts from, you know, ancient Sumeria, Babylonia. There's Akkadian artifacts, Assyrian artifacts, Chaldean civilization artifacts, and it's a collection that they say puts the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Louvre to shame with its variety of these. This collection of artifacts from that area of the world. Now, despite the museum being looted in 2003 during the Iraq War, it also has a Nimrud gold collection, and it features gold jewelry and figures of precious stone that date back to the 9th century BCE. And the collection of stone carvings and cuneiform tablets from Uruk that date back to 3,500 and 3,000 BCE. So, you know, really, really old and interesting artifacts. Now, among the old artifacts is some art and some jars more specifically. So with that looting in 2003, some of the artifacts kind of got mixed up. And timeline-wise. And there's this particular jar that I'm going to show the picture of in just a sec. This jar that is currently marked somewhere between 4,000 to 6,000 BCE. And they're leaving at that for right now, but they're going to take another look at that and make sure that that age is right for this particular jar. Now, the figure on this jar does not look human. And there are some humans on this jar, but this particular shape that this person found on the jar is very unusual. And he's stating that it's an ancient alien. So I'm going to pull this picture up here real quick so you can take a look at this. Here is the jar, the image of the jar in question. In the center here is the image of this very tall, thin being. Now, off to the right here, it looks like there is a regular human with a beard, you know, much shorter, almost, well, it looks like he has sort of the same style robe, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying that the face in particular is not like some of the others.
The one on the left, the one to the left also looks like an alien.
Yeah. You know, of course, this person is not a scholar or an art historian of any sort, so, you know, take it for what it's worth. But I saw this story, and it seemed kind of interesting, so I figured I'd pass it along.
Well, people back in those times were very suspicious, and they also kind of gave their gods they put their gods in the form of animals, right? So maybe that's the case in this case.
Yeah, and that very well could be.
Who knows? But it does kind of look like one of those lizard aliens. He looks like a lizard, sort of.
The reptiloids?
Yeah, the reptiloids, yeah.
That's just fun to say.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool. All right. Maybe it will come to light someday that is actually an alien, and we will have mud on our face. All right. So that's the news, right? Anything else? Anything you want to add to the news? Anybody? No?
I've had a good time pronouncing some of these ancient civilizations.
Like what?
The Akkadian and the Chaldean. And the cuneiform tablets from Uruk.
They are fun to say.
I usually try to take the stories that have really goofy words in it because I know you have hard times saying it sometimes.
That's not my strong point. It's not my strong suit. No. It's pronunciations. Thank you, Brad. and the Nimrod gold collection. That's one letter away from Nimrod gold collection.
Yeah, I don't know the actual pronunciation, but I went with the Nimrod.
Okay.
Sounds better than Nimrod.
You know, Iraq is really the cradle of our.
Oh, absolutely! The Tigris and the Euphrates, like from the Bible.
It's from the not just from the Bible, from all like.
But yeah,
mainstream
like Babylon,
religions,
Assyria, a lot of the you know the early civilizations that we're aware of. Are from that area for sure.
Yeah. So if there was aliens involved, that's where they would be. That's where they were. If they seeded our civilization, if there was aliens involved in our early formation, then that's where they would be.
True that.
All right, here we go.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
Mr. Brad, you've got the Creature Feature this week. What do you got?
Keeping with the theme of hard to pronounce names, once again I dipped into the world of comic books for my creature feature, and this character, this race of beings, comes from DC Comics, more specifically from the Legion of Superheroes comic series, and they are the Somaturians. Somatur is perhaps the 30th century galaxy's best-kept secret, mostly out of necessity. Discovered less than a century ago, the United Planets found a world populated by humanoid natives who act as host bodies for thriving colonies of bacteria and viral diseases, many of which are unknown beyond the confines of this bizarre planet. The Somaturians have developed a symbiotic relationship with these diseases and, unlike any other species in the galaxy, cannot live without them. The entire sector of space in which this world exists is under tight UP quarantine for all except authorized personnel from Medicus One. Medicus One is like...
those guys?
Wow. It's kind of like the CDC of the galaxy. Of the United Planets, I guess that's the best way to describe it. They study medical conditions and diseases and things like that. The doctors of Medicus One sometimes come to Somatur to collect samples of various diseases and use the planet to warehouse specimens of diseases considered too dangerous to store anywhere else. The Legion of Substitute Heroes, Infectious Lass...
All right.
Is a native of Somatur, having been taken off-world by personnel of Medicus One in order to study the unique Somaturian physiology. She escaped their examination chambers. The authorities have been unable to return her to the world of her birth for fear that any overt action against her by them will publicize the existence of Somatur and cause a hypochondriacal panic across the galaxy. So Infectious Lass is very interesting in that if she touches somebody, she can sort of select the disease that she wants to give to somebody.
Wow, that's some great power right there.
Because she has all these diseases, and like it says in there, they host so many different bacteria and viruses and things like that. She actually has the ability to select one and pass it to somebody, causing different things to happen, like She ended up giving somebody there's a story of her accidentally giving somebody a gender swap virus. And then she had to gender swap. It was it was Chroma Kid who has
this is DC, right?
Yes, it's DC. The DC Legion of Superheroes takes place in the future of the DC universe.
Okay, got it.
And she had to, I think Chroma Kid ended up having to go to Medicus One, and they had to cure him of this disease so he could be male again. I remember in another issue, she touched somebody and gave this person a kind of flu that they just, like, it's so fast acting, and this person just doubled over and hurled everywhere from this particular flu. She's very, very mostly conscious of the diseases that she can give to somebody, which makes her kind of a deadly weapon.
There was a recent episode of Grimm where one of the animals, not animals, one of the creatures that only the Grimms see had the ability to give basically all the diseases that they could suck up disease and hurt. No. They can suck up disease from people, like take their diseases away, but then they can also project them into somebody, which is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. So, yeah. Again, another more hard-to-pronounce type things that I seem to like so much. But yeah, the Somatarians, very interesting race, very colorful. They are bipedal humanoids. They have sort of they have antennae of sorts, but they're kind of short, as I'm doing this for video purposes. But they're kind of short buds on the top of their head, sort of positioned above the eye area, but towards the front of the crown of the head.
So not as big as the Andorians from Star Trek, which kind of they moved around. Did theirs move around?
I don't recall hers. Well, of course, this is in comic book form, but you never saw it droop or anything like that. So they just seem to be not flexible in any fashion.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And you're not quite sure what they specifically do, but that's just how their race looks. At least for Infectious Lass, she seemed to have like a greenish hue to her skin, but then sort of around her eyes, she almost seemed to have like a domino type mask, that kind of covers the eyes, but then in a sort of a teal blue, and then it sort of dripped down, sort of like almost like butterfly with like the base of some butterfly wings, mm-hmm. Down over the cheeks just a little bit, and. As I recall her attitude, she was very fun-loving and interesting, and she was, I can't remember, she was involved with one of the other Legion of Substitute Hero characters, but at one point in time. So there you go. The Somatarians. Boom.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Good job. We learned, again, more about the world of comics this week.
Comic book aliens.
Okay. Now, Brad, do you want to take a break because you just did a bunch of talking and have Anessa go first, or are you ready?
No, Anessa can go first. Ladies first.
Okay, ladies first.
Well, my pick is a short story, and it's like really super short, so I can't really say a whole lot about it. Otherwise, I might as well just like read you the story.
Just go ahead, Nessa, read the story.
Well, it's not quite that short. I mean, if you've got like 15 minutes, I can...
Okay. No, I think we're fine.
It's like maybe 10-minute read or quicker. I'm slow at reading, so it takes me like forever to get through a book. But anyway, the story is Alien Invasion in the GLAC, and it's by Mohsen... Hamid, and it is set, I guess, like in the future, and people have what sounds similar to Google Glass, but like an updated version, or They can either have the glasses or have it in the lenses. And the main character has it in the glasses because he finds that it's more comfortable and you're less likely to get eye infections because most people leave them in.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all about wearing the glasses. And they're living in this, kind of, it sounds like a rundown community, and they hear about this alien invasion, but they're not shown like any images of these aliens or like their spaceships or anything, but you know, they hear on the news and they're hearing rumors about these aliens that are invading. So a lot of people are of course concerned and paranoid and scared, and there's some thought that it might not actually be an invasion. It might just be a story by the government to keep everyone all in check so that way people stay inside and don't go outside and obey their curfews and whatnot. So it's an interesting read, and just to see like one person's perspective on the situation and his experience, because like everyone's pretty much low income in this neighborhood that the guy lives in, and so they all kind of do something that's not really kosher to make money. He goes to a facility that one of the things that the facility has, I guess, to try to up their resources and whatnot, is they collect the dew off the roofs into these barrels, and he goes each night and tries to collect a few gallons so that way people have water to use, and he's just making observations about what he's seeing and what he's hearing during this time that the aliens are invading the area. So it's really interesting to read. It's short, like I said, but there's not really any actual aliens in it. So you kind of have to imagine whether or not they're actually aliens in the story.
You know, that's kind of the best kind of story to have, is just kind of...
It's up for interpretation at the end, so...
It appeals to me. That kind of storytelling appeals to me.
Yeah, so I liked it. It wasn't like your usual alien invasion story where you've got like these big monsters or small creatures that take over your mind and do whatever. It's just you don't really know what's happening, and there's observations being made, and it may or may not be related to aliens, and so you're kind of left wondering whether or not there's actually an invasion.
Well, just think about this. You know how every time we've got a major event happen in the world, be it something from 9/11 or other violent things or even natural things, mm-hmm. other stories come out around the same time that are related to them, but not. And I could see that being part of that story, you know?
Right.
So I think it's a natural occurrence that those kind of things happen when major events go down like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think it would be kind of neat if perhaps this writer would make maybe a couple of similar stories just from other people's perspectives, so
yeah.
You can see whether or not, if it is indeed an alien invasion or the government trying to freak people out to get them stay inside and stay off the streets, and that way they don't have to worry about them as much, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of cool to see.
That would be awesome.
Yep, I recommend it.
All right.
I did a Google search for alien short stories, and it was one of the first ones that came up. So we'll have the link in the show notes so people can check it out.
And as I always do with our picks when we can, I will have the picks on the store at galacticnetcast.com. That way you'll have a link to Amazon that you can download it and read it. So, all right. You got that from Amazon, right? Or did you just get it off of
No, it's the Googles. It's a website.
Ooh, okay.
So.
All right, got it. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Let's go on. Let's move on. Go on. Move on to Brad. What's Brad's pick?
I decided to go with a movie from 1955.
Whoa.
Called The Beast with a Million Eyes.
Whoa.
Yeah. While I enjoy 50s movies, sci-fi films, in a lot of cases, they needed editing, and sometimes real actors. But, you know, at this particular time, movie studios just wanted to make a quick buck by, you know, surprising people and shocking them with rocketry and jet engines and things like that. People were thinking about the future. So they definitely wanted to cash in on that particular, you know, that craze. That would that be a zeitgeist, do you think, at that point in time? Would that be considered a zeitgeist, do you think?
Sure, why not? It's pretty much the definition of it, right?
Yeah. Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you like the brief synopsis from IMDb, just so you get kind of a little bit of a snapshot of this. The Kelly family seems to be on the brink of dissolution. Alan's date farm is based in the California desert, miles from the nearest hamlet.
Hang on one second, Brad. When you said date farm, the first thing that came to mind was like a farm that people went to go on dates. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. My mind.
It's like
there.
The original eHarmony from the 50s.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, continue.
Let's go for a hayride.
Hey,
yay!
Let's go on out to the date farm.
I'm sorry.
His harvest has been bad for several years, and he insists on sheltering and feeding a hulking mute called Him in exchange for chores. His wife, Carol, is at her breaking point, and daughter Sandra finds little respite from the parental bickering in her boyfriend, Larry. Then one afternoon, something whirs overhead and is heard to crash far out in the desert. Shortly thereafter, the kindly family dog attacks Carol. Harmless Him begins to exhibit menacing behaviors, and other animal life seems to become particularly aggressive. Think of like the Grapes of Wrath meets really horrible sci-fi premise. You have an alien invasion. That's what this movie is. Literally, his date farm is. I mean, it's out in the desert. I mean, just no ifs, ands, or buts. You move out of this particular area where they live, and you're just in the sweltering desert. Alan seems like a really, decent guy.
Brad.
I knew it was coming.
Brad, what name did you just say?
Alan!
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
You know, I wish I could say that I actually had planned for this to happen, but no, I hadn't actually.
And that's why we have a soundboard for cases like that.
His wife, Carol, just really kind of comes across as being, she needs medication. I mean, there's no two ways about it. She's got problems.
Well, they're trapped out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, and that's part of it too. She just feels like she's not doing anything with her life, and she's jealous of her young daughter who has her whole life ahead of her, and she's losing it. This Him guy is a very tall, solidly built, middle-aged man who does not speak, and when you do see him in his lodgings, he's got drawings and images of pinups that are like taped or pasted to his wall by his bed. A little weird. But he's always been a harmless guy, and you get the impression he's been around there for quite some time. Duke, the family dog, is a very playful German shepherd that is Sandra's sidekick. And Sandra, Ellen, her father, wants Sandra to go off to college. You know, he makes a big point at the beginning. We've got the money saved. She should go. And the mother's angry because basically it's just going to be her, Ellen, and him. And she's pretty certain that she's going to lose her mind. The next thing we know, glass is shattering in the house and things are just going crazy because this high-pitched whining sound reaches sort of a crescendo and dissipates to signify that some alien craft and some weirdness is about to happen. Duke goes to investigate and he comes back a changed dog, and Carol finds herself in a position where she needs to defend herself. And things just kind of, at a very slow pace, go off the rails. It's like a slow-moving train wreck. It really needed editing. Yeah. Really needed editing.
Maybe they tried
to keep the pace.
Maybe they tried kind of a lower-key type alien invasion story. You know, maybe that was their whole thing about this movie.
It almost felt like they were trying to pad out the time. I mean, really, the movie is like maybe an hour and 10 minutes. So it's not very 74 minutes, so an hour and 14 minutes. It could have been shortened to about 45. I mean, seriously, there's a lot of stuff in there. It's just completely unnecessary and it throws off the timing, and you just kind of left drumming your fingers wanting something to happen. And something besides Carol breaking down and crying.
a little bit less of that.
Bitter tears of her life gone by. I keep droning on about the editing. This craft looks like the only thing that I can describe it as is like a sinister coffee pot from the 50s era. So it's kind of chromish looking.
Oh, neat.
It seems to have very large caliber bullet casings glued to the side of it. Like 50 cal bullet casings are glued to the side of it. I'm not even making that up. That's exactly what it looks like.
Wow.
Gotta love 1950s, 1960s sci-fi. Yeah, it's the best.
You know, and what I keep going back to, and you know, folks that have listened to this show before, Forbidden Planet is an excellent 50s sci-fi film that has pretty decent pacing. It is in color, but I mean, that's not the important thing, but it's just so good, you know? And then you get some of this obviously bargain basement productions like The Beast with a Million Eyes.
So,
and it's kind of disappointing.
So this is the 1950s version of an asylum film.
Yeah,
okay.
It really is for a good descriptor, very very apt descriptor.
All right.
The link that we're going to have for this video, if you do find yourself wanting to purchase this wonderful piece of history, is actually as a double feature, which is The Phantom at 10,000 Leagues.
Well,
I didn't even look at that one.
Under the ocean.
It is a underwater adventure. If you are so inclined, you could pick up the both of them.
Okay.
I found it on Netflix. I mean, you can watch it there for free if you have Netflix streaming. You can kind of skip it, really. It's not anything that I would. Two stars out of five,
okay.
If that.
Okay.
One
you know,
and a half, maybe.
There's no rule that says that you have to like your pick. So
that's very true.
Quite fine, Brad. All right. Good presentation, as always.
Trying to keep it brief. Trying to keep it brief.
All right. So let's wrap things up with my pick. And just like Anessa, mine are short. But it's a few short things. It's not one short thing. It's a bunch of short things. It's a web series called The Invaders, Angie's Logs. And how I got how I learned about this was from a tweet from somebody that followed us on Twitter, @GalacticNetcast. So basically it's kind of a third person kind of like an Essa story, a third person's view on an alien invasion, but you see more of the invasion in this web series. It follows this little girl, and she's basically vlogging what's happening during this alien invasion. Like, there's the first one she introduces, the first episode is basically her introducing what happened. And then the second one, she's taken by, she goes outside to investigate a light, and she's taken by the aliens. And then the third one, she's back from being taken. Not much details revealed as to what happened when she was taken, but third episode, she is back, and an orb comes into her bedroom, and she starts talking to this orb. You don't hear the orb, but you hear her side of the conversation, so she must be talking to it kind of telepathically. Anyways, it's a cute little web series on YouTube. It's great, well done, and good writing. The actress, the little girl who plays the little girl, is great. So I highly recommend it. It's called The Invaders, the web series, The Invaders, Angie's Log. So just think a vlog on YouTube during an alien invasion. That's pretty much what this is.
Interesting.
And we'll have the link on the show notes or in the show notes. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, you can find the link below in the video to it as well. All right, that's going to do it, I think, for our picks and for this episode. We're unusually short. We're actually, I think we're going to make it under an hour this time, which is never happens. Never.
All right.
I know. Weird, huh?
It is.
So a couple of reminders before we wrap up here. We're going to start, and if you want to watch us live, we're going to be starting an hour earlier, starting next week at 7 p.m. Central Time. And there's a reason for that, because we here at Galactic Netcasts are launching a brand new podcast next week called, and this is a joint effort, everybody put their suggestions in, but as always happens, my suggestion wins. But I think you guys like my suggestion, though, right? You weren't just saying you liked it when really you were like, ah, oh, that sucks.
It sucks.
No, well, you need to. What is it?
Oh, you don't know? You know, don't
well,
you?
Well, the people don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's called.
It doesn't matter if I know. Okay. Well, it kind of does, but.
Okay. It's called the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club. And basically, it's going to be a lot looser of a show, and it's going to cover pretty much anything that happened in the week in science fiction. Going to be more of a roundtable discussion with more people involved. I believe Anessa and Brad, you're going to be involved. Matt from the Sci-Fi Film School will be coming on pretty regularly, it sounds like, at least for the first few episodes. And then we're going to invite other people in, because I know a lot of people that in podcasting that would be perfect for guest spots. So, and it'll be a good way to introduce the listener, the viewer, to these other podcasts and these other podcasters. Or if you know, if you're a listener, if you the listener would like to come on the show, let us know. Maybe we'll bring you on, because it's so easy to bring people on during Google Hangouts. It's painless. Well, thank God it's painless, but it's easy for you to do. That would suck if there was pain involved. Oh, it hurts. Oh. So yeah, next week
Google Hangout injection.
Yeah. So next week, 8:30 or 9 p.m. Central Time, we'll be launching the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. See, it's kind of be like a kind of a club, like you know, welcome to the club. Let's just talk science fiction for an hour or so. You know, a lot less
like the Mickey Mouse Club. They had the mouse ears. Can we get like some kind of headgear that's like,
yeah,
like an atom maybe that you
whatever
know,
your
bounces what, on a spring.
Yeah, whatever your favorite sci-fi show or genre would be, you can wear the appropriate headwear. Sure, why not?
Sweet.
And if you have any suggestions for what you want us to cover, let us know. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. And we're going to cover the gamut. We're going to, you know, hit hard sci-fi, Might throw some fantasy at you once in a while, you know? Good way.
What?
Yeah. I mean, why not? You know? Let's make it loose. Let's just... Because my interpretation of sci-fi may be different from your interpretation, Brad. So, you know?
That's true.
We'll just throw a few stories out there and we'll just discuss. You know, we won't have much of a structure. And we would love for you to check it out next week. We'll have it originally on the Mega feed, and I think I'll throw it in on the Alien Invasion feed as well, but it'll eventually have its own feed. So, again, Sci-Fi Geeks Club starting next Thursday live right here.
Wow.
Yeah, fun, exciting stuff.
Bam.
All right, so if you have feedback... that email I just mentioned, or 805-328-3966. All of our details are at our website, galacticnetcast.com. We would love for you to subscribe to the show. If you haven't already, you can do that through the website. All the appropriate links are there. So that's going to do it for this Alien Invasion, number 94. Before we get out of here, final thoughts. Anessa, you go first, or does it is Brad first? I forget.
Usually I'm first, and I'm just looking up hotboxing to make sure that when we put this as the title of the show that I'm actually, you know, does it have a hyphen? How does it work? But it is all one word. So if for you folks maybe listening in Colorado or other areas where recreational marijuana is available or
what was it?
Or not,
what was the
hotboxing.
What was the full title again? What hot
cosmic hot
cosmic hotboxing. Okay, all right, good.
I even put it on the
at the top of the page.
Okay,
at the top of the document.
All right, thank you. Okay,
you're welcome,
Anessa. What's your final thought?
Dave never asked me about the nicknames this week.
Oh,
oh,
crap.
That's right.
He just totally like skipped on over, like it's getting the show.
Well, I did too, quite honestly. Normally, I'm like, if Dave misses it, I'm like, hey, what's that all about? And
I was already like half a paragraph in, so I'm like, I'm just gonna.
Okay,
show up,
okay, let's go back. Let's go back to the names, and then each one you can explain what they are. All right. So we had.
Actually, I changed. It's supposed to be she, but I figured it would be he since
okay.
Younger guys.
So he said it to the family dog. What's that from?
They're all from the same thing. Brad actually gave me a book for Christmas called Vacation, and it's from the very first paragraph of the book. In chapter one, it says, I recall only one sentence that she said. She said it all the time. Every day was an occasion. If she had to be away on a shoot, she said it to my father. If I had to take cough syrup, she said it to me. She said it to the family dog before his operation. It was her wisdom. She said it with pride. What my mother said was, you won't even feel it. So that's what it's from.
What's this book about? What's the book
Oddly
about?
Enough, that was our prom theme.
I know.
You won't even feel it.
So, now, I'm not very far in, but... I kind of dig it, so.
What's the general? What's it about? What's it about?
It is basically about like the first chapter is about this person who's on a train, and she notices this guy, who apparently has a dent in his head. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but he has an injury on his head apparently, and he gets off the train, and she sees that. He looks like he might have gotten off at the wrong stop, and it ends up picking up where this guy is. I just noticed at the top of the document it's this cosmic hotboxing, like really huge.
You're welcome.
Quit distracting Anessa, Brad. Go ahead, Anessa.
I did it a while ago.
I know. I scrolled up to the top of the document to see the quotes that I included for y'all's nicknames, and then I just noticed, like, cosmic hotboxing. I just scrolled to the very top. I hadn't scrolled to the very top until now. And so the guy who misses the train, his name is Myers, and he goes to this other guy's house who's not home, and you get that Myers really doesn't like this guy and is paying him a visit. But yeah, that's about as far as I've gotten. The back of the book says that, Myers kind of becomes suspicious of his wife because she's become absent in the evenings and starts trying to follow her around. So maybe that might have something to do with him not liking this particular character. But
what's the book called?
It's called Vacation.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And it's by Deb Olin Unferth.
All right.
So
you'll have to have that as a recommendation, even though it's not really related to sci-fi, probably.
Yeah, it's not. Well,
instead of the Westchester Unferths.
Who knows?
Okay. I've always wanted to say that.
We may be setting a record for longest final thought ever in the history of our podcast.
I think so.
You're welcome. So yes, I'm reading Vacation. I heard about it through a podcast.
We were under an hour.
Okay. So. Now we're over? Yeah. Now we're over? Okay. All right.
You're welcome.
All right.
That's why we were under an hour, is because we just skipped over the...
Yes, exactly.
Oh, where's that from?
Exactly.
Oh, and also, I think John was trying to watch our friend from Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
So, hi, John.
Oh, big John.
Oh, John.
Hi, John.
Hello.
Yep.
Mate. All right, that's going to do it for this alien invasion. Until next week, we will talk to you guys later.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.